Hello and welcome to Disrupting the Degree, the education marketing podcast. I'm Stephen Cleary from Carnival Content with
Zeynep Fayez
and Zeynep Fayez from the Brand Education.
This podcast is all about higher education with industry trends, experts and practical ideas across the student experience, brand and marketing.
In this episode of Disrupting the Degree, we're joined by Rebecca Lever, Associate Director of Marketing and UK Student Recruitment at Swansea University. We're going to talk about the virtual events, the on-campus experience and Clearing 2020.
Hello, Rebecca. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hello. It's lovely to be with you all.
I probably should say that Rebecca was my line manager at the University of South Wales for 4 years. So was it 4 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Or 5 years.
Maybe longer.
Oh, right. Well, that sounds great. Thanks.
You've got to get the facts right, Stephen.
I don't know whether it was something like that because it was really bad line managing me. But anyway, swiftly moving on, we're here to interview you, not me. Okay, let's start off with everybody's favourite, Clearing 2020. So how was it for Swansea and did anything eventful happen this year?
Let me think. It's difficult actually to know where to start. I've worked in HE for like 17 years now, so I've done 17 clearings and each one is always different, but this one was like nothing else that had ever gone before. I mean, obviously, like all universities were worrying about clearing. We realised that we were probably unlikely to have international students. So our home market was really important to us. We didn't know what was going to happen because of COVID. Obviously, there was all the exam furore. We didn't know if they were going to turn up. Were they going to defer? Did they want to come to university still?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there was lots of anxiety for many people in the run-up. So we had to plan an awful lot more than we did before.
Did it work out okay in numbers so far?
Yes. Surprisingly, yes. After everything that went on, and we saw a lot of movement, both incoming and outgoing, so it was quite difficult to monitor where we were exactly. But yeah, we're very, very happy with what we've got now.
Because I read something from the chief executive of UCAS, I think it was yesterday, she put it out on LinkedIn saying that actually it seems to be okay. But I suppose when you have something like COVID-19, no one knows what's going on at all. Did anything else interesting happen to Swansea that may have made it into the news?
Yes, there were a few things. At Swansea, clearing is always ranked as a major project. It's a tier one project. So it has support from a planning team. And it's their job to do risk assessments, make contingency plans, make sure that if anything disastrous happened, we'd be okay. And of course, with this year, with COVID, we had to do extra risk assessments and backup plans. And it was, you know, we had numerous meetings. I think there was sort of like 5 different operational groups for clearing, you know, one for the operations, one for the marketing, one for the events, one for telephones, etc. So we had lots and lots of meetings that we had to sort of think about what could possibly happen. But also we had obviously added challenges. We didn't know whether we were going to be running clearing from on campus, whether we were able to. I mean, when we were making all these plans, we were in proper lockdown. No one was going anywhere. So we didn't know if we'd be able to run our helpline from on campus. We knew we weren't going to have our student ambassadors who normally staff our helpline. So we had to recruit staff from other parts of the university to help. And also, when we realised we could do it on campus, we had to run clearing in a socially distant manner. Mm-hmm. So normally, we'd have all our staff in about 5 different massive rooms in the library, and they'd all be, you know, working together and sat next to each other, you know, in banks and banks of phones and PCs. But this time, we had to have the helpline running in multiple locations across 2 campuses. Where normally they'd all be in, you know, one big building. So, but our planning turned out to be very fortuitous.
Yes.
Because the night before clearing, when I think...
the night before results day.
Yeah, the night before results day, yeah, on the Wednesday night, I think we had probably the first or perhaps second government U-turn to deal with. Mm-hmm. And we were discussing what we're going to do with the announcement about grades, et cetera. We were working out what comms we needed to send out, if we had to change the website, et cetera. So we just finished a meeting where we were discussing our response to all of this. And we just sort of like ended the meeting. I was about to drive to Swansea. And then I got a WhatsApp message from our head of strategic comms saying, Bay Campus is on fire.
And
my jaw just dropped. And my husband was sat next to me and I said, Bay Campus is on fire. And he said, oh, it'll just be a bin fire or something.
Yeah. God.
So then I next sent a message with a video of the campus on fire.
With
proper plumes of black smoke. You know, it looked a
just
massive
when you think
fire.
It can't get worse.
Yeah.
It's like the the joke of, oh, we need to plan this just in case, oh, I don't know, the campus sets on fire.
Yeah. I think we have actually used that line in the past. So yes, we did have to plan in case the campus was on fire.
Oh, wow. How did you tackle that? Just
with the fire. Rebecca, no. Are you trained firefighter?
Actually, I forgot that bit of my job. I love being a fire warden.
Everybody's learning new stuff at the moment, so yeah. Who knows?
I mean, we were.
Oh, you are a fire warden.
I am. Yeah. I mean, luckily,
I used to be one too.
Luckily, the fire was out really quickly. Our security acted very quickly, and I think the fire service were on campus within 6 minutes, which is amazing. Oh,
wow. Yeah.
No one was hurt. No one was in the building, and you know, we're very grateful to the fire service who've put the fire out and have worked with us ever since. However, the fire was actually in our clearing hub on that campus.
It was actually the clearing room that set fire.
It was actually the clearing. Well, it was the fire. I think the fire started. Well, we don't know where the fire started, but it was in the same building. But that room was unusable. You know, it had fire in it.
So, oh, my God.
So we realised that, and I think it was our engineering and science teams who were going to be in that building. So we had to put our contingency plan into place straight away. And the planning team, they just went straight into action. The IT team were on campus, I think within about an hour, and they'd moved phones, connected new PCs in our reserve location. So the planning definitely paid off on that one.
Did anything else happen at, say, I don't know, any on-campus events that might be interesting to our listeners?
Yes. I mean, what we didn't plan for, though, were the various government U-turns that went on. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't plan for them because obviously we didn't know about them. So I think every university admissions team in the country was cursing various different governments when the changes kept coming. So I think Swansea did better than most because we're always in contact with our applicants and we're always flexible. You know, so we hadn't actually, you know, on the first round of sort of results day, I don't think we'd actually outright rejected anybody because, you know, that their grades just didn't match. We always have conversations with people first. So when we finally had the centre assessed grades, we didn't have to go back to a lot of people and say, actually, you can come after all, which I know other universities did have to do. So I think our main worry then was that we might lose people because we had a lot of people come through on their insurance, you know, as Swansea as their insurance. And we were a little bit scared that they might go back to their firm choices. But I think because we'd spoken to everyone and we were really flexible, we held on to a lot of people.
I think it's that during a time where anxiety is so high, the fact that you communicated with them and reassured them, even though you were the reserve choice, like that's the way you win through a situation like this. I think that we've had quite a few conversations before, myself, Zainab and Zenat, about this. So the fact that you did that, so you actually retained most of those students then?
I don't know the exact figures, but yeah, we retained a much higher proportion than we thought we would, which is why we've ended up in such a good position at the end, really.
It's so simple though, isn't it? That as a university, be just human and kind towards your applicants and it pays back.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was quite annoying that we had to rewrite all the comms, rewrite the website, rewrite the guidance to staff on the helpline more than once.
Yes.
So that was quite tricky because we had to do that at speed. I think I'd written one day 5,000 words before breakfast.
Oh, wow.
And my
imagine
fingers
you
were
typing
burning.
Away.
Yeah.
But what time was breakfast, though?
Another reason we were able to retain so many is the fact that we were able to run on-campus events. Now, I know not many people were able to run open days, you know, clearing applicant days on campus. But we thought it was really, really important. We know how important it is for people in clearing who maybe hadn't really heard of Swansea before or only had some loose connection before. We know how important it is, particularly for parents to come and visit. So we decided this quite far in advance that we wanted to try and do it. Mm-hmm. Now, the planning for these events was unbelievable. We had to do so many risk assessments, and that's not just risk assessments for the events, but it was risk assessing every activity that would happen on campus. So every contact point, every building, every room had to be risk assessed. So we had very, very sort of strict timetables of what we could and couldn't do. We could only accept pre-booked guests, and we had to limit the number of people in the time slot on when they came onto campus. Everyone had to wear masks inside, and we provided sanitizer and masks on arrival. However, the parents were so grateful they could come and visit, and we got some amazing feedback. And I think that's why we retained the insurance choices as well. And it was also lovely to be back on campus, because I think that was the first time many of us had been back. And I think because we hadn't had the physical open days in the spring or the summer, I think we all felt the lack of meeting our prospective students and their parents. I mean,
it's so important.
Yeah. And I think for staff, it's the favourite bit of the job if you're in recruitment or marketing. And also you get a much, much better idea of what people want, because they'll tell you, you know, they'll say, well, what I really wanted to do was come and see the accommodation. I've got all the academic information I need. So, you know, we could adjust our activities accordingly.
And whether it just feels right being there.
Yeah.
That's always what people say, isn't it?
Yeah. It was really good to meet parents, and I was having a conversation with one of them, and our new campus tour that we were doing, we wanted to show them the beach, obviously Swansea for being famous for being on the beach. So I said to one parent, have you visited the beach yet? And he said, yes, it's lovely, but I think you need to take a look at the beach artwork. I was, sorry, beach artwork? And he said, someone has drawn an enormous penis on the beach.
Oh God, can you imagine?
So I didn't really know what to say. So I mean, luckily, both the parent and the student had a very good sense of humour, and we just laughed an awful lot, and I collapsed on the floor.
has that set the scene for Swansea?
Yeah, I know. So I went to look on the beach, and sure enough, he was right. It was.
Were you about to say I went to examine?
But there are bound to be some double entendres in this conversation, so I apologise. So it was there. It was about 30 metres long, and how should I say this?
Whoa.
It was quite detailed. So I messaged the management team on WhatsApp, and everyone like pics or it didn't happen. So I had to be there taking pictures and sending them to everyone.
Oh God.
And then everyone was saying, what are you going to do about it? And I have to say, until that point, it hadn't really occurred to me that I had to do something about it. I thought it was just going to be there. So I got a student ambassador to do it, to be honest. So a colleague asked me if they could turn it into a picture or, you know, of something else. And I said, he's an engineering ambassador, not an art student.
Oh, wow. He's creative, though. You've got to give him kudos.
However, he came back, something to put on his CV, I guess, for future jobs, and said, I think I just made it worse.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
So to be honest, I didn't go back and check. So I think the motto for clearing this year was be prepared for absolutely anything.
I think that was a good executive decision to make as well, I think.
which leads us on to, so Swansea was one of the fastest to launch the virtual open days. So how did you guys manage that? And did your agility pay off?
Well, funnily enough, virtual open days was on our list of things to do this year anyway. In my previous role as head of marketing for the College of Science at Swansea, I trialled them last year in about, I think it was November. And I wanted to do this because we found that we were having lots of applications from computer science, maths and physics students, but they'd never been to see us. And it was a much higher proportion of those students than, say, the biosciences or geography students. So I wanted them to offer them an alternative to see if they prefer a virtual event. So it was a mixture of live chat and pre-recorded video. It wasn't slick, but it gave us a starting point, and we had various things in place for this year.
You had a BBC mention, didn't you? And we heard that your applications went out of the roof.
Yeah. So I think I don't know if it was the first or second one we did this year, but there was a mention on BBC News, I think, and it was when lockdown had first started. So it was either end of March or very beginning of April. Someone on the news said, and if you're looking for something to do today, Swansea University has a virtual open day. So a few of us heard that on the news. We were like, that's interesting. And then while we were obviously monitoring the traffic on the site, we found that we had 5,000 people on there.
That's incredible.
Which was interesting.
Yeah.
It does show that to be that responsive and to launch it that quickly definitely pays off being the first, because obviously everyone is doing virtual events now.
I think one of the reasons we were quick off the mark is because we'd already cancelled one open day in February because of I think it was Storm Dennis. The weather was really bad.
You're not having much luck this year.
I know. Where is Swansea?
Fire, flood, plagues we've had already. All we need is locusts next.
But as long as you're recruiting students still, that's
funny. The goal.
So we knew we had to keep our applicants engaged. So we did have a smaller event in March, followed by a larger virtual open day in April. And then our June one was massive. And also we'd learned from each event and adapted, improved as we went along. So the June events were full on Zoom sessions, webinars, as well as sort of live chats. We also did live tours, live guided tours. So we sort of did student ambassadors narrating where they were going, like, so we used Google Street View and things to go around the campus with ambassadors saying what happened in each building. So that was really good.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, really exciting, yeah.
I think that's the thing to make it more interactive and more visual. Obviously, it's not going to be the same as doing it on campus, but if it's just live chat and pre-recorded videos, it's not quite as exciting as like, oh, this is what happens here, and you can actually see the... So that's really cool. That's
we talked about that too, didn't we? Like that there should be like a real-time kind of experience of for different students and different parts of the university. I think it was like a couple of episodes back we talked about that, which is quite cool to see it's happening.
Yeah. And you mentioned this is your 17th clearing, Rebecca. Just love to know a little bit more about, you know, what you've been doing so far in your career.
Well, I've been in HE, as you said, for 17 years. I started off as digital marketing manager at the University of South Wales and basically stayed in that role, although the role didn't stay the same. Obviously, 2003, no social media, etc. And then moved to Swansea University in 2017, I think. I'm really, really passionate about content. I love storytelling. I love emotional storytelling as well. So I want to get a reaction from people. And that emotional connection that we have with our applicants and students is really important. And before they get here, I love working in digital marketing because you could convey that emotion to them, you know, in a digital way. Obviously, the icing on the cake is them coming onto campus. And I was very lucky, Stephen, to work with amazing people who were very talented in you know, producing content that was emotional and did make that connection. I mean, my brief for making a video used to be, make me cry.
And I did.
And he did. Stephen did.
Not just me, though. Shout out to Nina and Jen as well.
Yeah, Nina and Jen were also amazing. And we were a great team. And it was so much fun. And I think because of the university we were at, content became even more important because the university, it wasn't, you know, top 10 in rankings or anything.
And a new brand.
And it was a new brand, yeah. So we didn't have a historical reputation. So it was really important to tell the stories of our staff, our students, and what our graduates have gone on to do.
Well, yeah, and I think I think that's where I think universities lack sometimes, you know, the storytelling element. I think that really adds the human touch, like the value to the student. I think making
it
all about them.
And it differentiates the university as well. The thing that's truly unique about each university is the stories and the experiences of their students and staff. Well, going back to students then, so and the current situation, so what is Swansea's approach to the COVID student experience?
Well, obviously it's safety first. You know, again, the planning that has gone on to, you know, welcoming students back onto campus this year has been enormous. I mean, we've had all these different work packages, working really hard to deliver, you know, blended learning. The timetabling alone has been a monster project. And, you know, we want to make our students, staff and local community feel safe and welcome. I think Swansea's always had a good reputation for looking after its students. We always perform really highly in NSS and parents always give us great feedback about how well we look after them. But obviously this year that's more important than ever. And also, we know that this year's new students have had a really difficult time over the summer. You know, they haven't done their exams. They've had their education disrupted. They've had to go through the indignity of, you know, centre-assessed grades, etc. They haven't had, you know, leaving school parties. You know, they haven't met their friends much over the summer. So we do want them to come to university and have a good experience.
Yes.
But obviously that experience is different There's no getting away from that, that this year's Freshers Week is different from last year's. I think we've worked so hard to make sure they have a good experience, and I really hope it pays off. We've worked so hard over the summer, which has also been really annoying when people are saying, oh, universities have been shut. We haven't been shut. We've been working harder than ever. Our academics mm-hmm. have been working so hard to, you know, take their learning online, and they've done so well to do it, you know, so quickly. But also the planning for, you know, residential services, the amazing work that they've done. And our students' union have worked really hard, and our student services team. So what we wanted to do was to prepare an experience for our students. So we are doing a lot of virtual activity. Mm-hmm. But in our way, I think this year's cohort are ideally placed to take advantage of that virtual activity.
Definitely. We've talked about that.
They're more likely to be playing Xbox online with their mates rather than meeting up, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And they FaceTime a friend rather than popping around their house. So in a way, they're just doing as normal. You know, this is normal for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have teenagers myself in the house, and they don't tend to socialise physically that much, but they're all on every device known to man talking to their friends all the time. Mm-hmm. Yes. We are sort of running physical activities as well. We have actually built almost like tented cities, if you like.
I love seeing on your Twitter, is it the dockyard?
Yeah, the dockyard. So one's the dock and one's the yard. And we've got one on each campus, but I can't remember which one's which. I think
is it a converted Dodgems?
It looks
amazing.
It looks like sort of converted fairground rides. And that's, it's all set up so students can socialise with their housemates, who obviously they don't have to be socially distant from. So they're all on sort of like picnic tables, which are, you know, separated.
Oh, that's nice.
You can order food and drink on an app. You can book slots as well. You can book a 2-hour time slot and you sit with your flatmates. So this took an awful lot of investment, an awful lot of hard work. And also we want to carry on in January and February because we have new students arriving then. We've had to change start dates this year for the first time. I know some universities have done January starts for ages, but this was a new thing for Swansea. So we've had to not only rethink our timetable and our teaching, but also the student experience happens at different times of year now.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, you know, some these experiences that you're physically offering, is Swansea thinking about offering those online, like having a virtual dockyard, having a virtual kind of place? Because, as you said, your students, you know, very digital focused, because you know that about them now. Do you think Swansea has a contingency to continue this going online moving forward?
Like, we're already doing a lot online, particularly our clubs and societies. It was really nice to see what they were doing over the summer. They, you know, we had quite a lot of Instagram takeovers from our clubs and societies. And it was really fun to see how they were training, even though they were remote. So, for example, our cheerleading squad, they put together really nice sort of TikTok videos of them training, even though they were doing a routine together, but they were all separately. You know, they were all over the country doing it. So there is lots of activities going on online, particularly, as I said, on the clubs and societies. But, you know, we've got all the usual things going on, like, you know, like quizzes and competitions and things. I mean, everything is so up in the air at the moment about students, and we do need to be prepared to make sure they're okay, make sure they've got things to do, and make sure they've got the support they need as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do we touch on how marketing and comms handle the really unfortunate, inevitable situation of cases on campus?
Well, all universities are going to have cases of COVID on campus. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's already started. I'm sure there will be more cases. And I think universities are in the main dealing with that really well. The issue is that, you know, you can put all, you know, the virtual activities on, teaching can go online pretty quickly, and you can manage their behaviour on campus. You know, I mean, we've installed, you know, sanitizer stations everywhere. Every building has a one-way system. We've put extra space in so people can study in a socially distant manner. But it's really difficult to monitor their behaviour when, you know, the majority of students live off campus. That's the issue that we're having, I think.
And they are adults.
Yeah, and they are adults. And, I mean, they have signed up to a student charter when they enrol, and they agree to follow, you know, behaviour guidelines, and they understand the behaviour we expect. But it's not something we can police 24/7. Across, you know, different districts of Swansea. I believe, I think I was reading this morning that some Scottish universities are operating a yellow card and red card system. So if students misbehave, it's quite clear that their behaviour won't be tolerated. But so we are as transparent as we can. We do sort of, you know, put our position clearly. We don't want any further restrictions to take place. But I keep thinking back, well, probably not a good idea to thinking about when I was that age and I was at university. And I think if someone told me, you know, not to have a party with other people and you know, get drunk, I think I'd have said, nah, you're all right.
You know, probably would. Yeah.
But
it's natural human instinct, yeah, isn't it? If someone tells you you can't do something, you want to do it.
Yeah. And they've had an awful summer.
We're not promoting
as well.
Anything here.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
And that's why
please
I think,
do as you're told.
Yeah. No, but I don't think young people want to be told what to do.
No,
I think
of course
they've decided to come to Swansea because it's their choice, right? So why are we trying to restrict other things on them? So I think it's about educating and, you know, having that transparency and the dialogue to just be, you know, just be careful. Just don't do things that are going to harm others.
So your Exploring Global Problems podcast highlights Swansea's cutting-edge research. Not that many universities have used podcasts in their marketing. What attracted you to the medium?
I think it's going back to what I said earlier about telling stories. I'm always blown away by the research stories at Swansea. Every time you meet an academic, they'll tell you something amazing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And some of them, their research is truly world-changing. You know, they're doing things that nobody else is doing, will make a massive difference to people's lives. So I wanted to get those stories out there more. I think a few years ago, there was a trend to produce lots of videos about research, which were really great, but they were either too short, I think,
yes.
And you just couldn't talk in detail about the research in the length of time that people were prepared to watch videos. I think they'd watch a long video if they were really interested in the subject, but you couldn't grab someone's attention by saying, you know, watch this 4-minute video about research, because people are going to know you're all right.
No, 4 minutes was too long.
4 minutes was too long. And the length
but
of
time.
It's
not long enough to really tell the story.
No, you can't tell the story. You can't tell about the story about the research. And also what I'm always interested in is how our academic staff got to the point where they are and decided to do that research. And I wanted to hear the stories of our academics as well as, you know, the work that they were doing. I wanted to hear about them. And so podcasts seemed an ideal format to do this in, because people will listen to podcasts for, you know, 40 minutes or an hour. And they'll have it on in the background, or, you know, when they're doing something else. I mean, I tend to listen at the gym. That way, you know, if we found the right person to do the interviews who could bring out these stories, I thought it was going to work. And we were very lucky to find a great host in one of our history academics, Sam Blaxland.
Shout out to Sam.
Shout out to Sam. Who had done some media work before. He has an amazing voice. He's great at asking the right questions to our academics, and some amazing stories came out. I think we paused it due to the summer of chaos, but I think we're looking to do another series quite soon.
So waiting for season two then.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about student centricity. So we definitely think that student-centric change and innovation is needed in higher education. What do you think the University of the future will look like?
Well, I think lots of people have been giving this some thought. But it's a tricky question, because in the UK, a lot depends on what the government decide to do.
It's very true.
That the recent proposed changes for the NSS, I think, sound a little bit alarming.
So that's the National Student Survey for our international listeners.
I think it's the one piece of national feedback that we get about how students are experiencing university. And universities put a lot of store by it. I mean, the government are claiming that it's a way to reduce the bureaucratic load on universities, which I'm sure we'd all support. Mm-hmm. But it's really important to get student feedback and hear their authentic voices. As you say, we need to be student-centric. However, the government sound like they don't want us to be student-centric, because then, you know, the changes sound like we might not get the authentic student voice. So we'll have to see, I think.
That sounds quite crazy, actually, because you'd see students as customers, and imagine advising retailers or any other sector that, you know, don't make it student focused or customer centric.
I know it seems a bit strange, because at the moment universities are bending over backwards to deliver the best student experience, and in a way that's what we compete on, you know.
Yes.
I think it used to be sort of, we used to compete on shiny facilities and new buildings, etc. But now...
But everyone has those.
Everyone has those, yeah.
And at the moment, it's not exactly the most important thing when 80% is online.
No, it's about what happens to them when they're at university. And also how they're treated, I think, is really important. I mean, we discussed in clearing how that made a massive difference for Swansea. And I think that's something we take into when they're on campus. It's we think we treat them well. My view is that universities, what universities are there for, are making the world a better place. And that's what they're there for, whether it's, you know, our graduates who we train to go and make the world a better place, or just the act of them receiving education makes the world a better place.
Totally agree.
So I'm hoping that universities will really show their value in this post-COVID world. We will have people with, you know, our graduates and our academics at the moment, they have amazing resilience, patience, stamina. You know, they've been through a lot, and this is going to stand them in good stead in future years.
I think that's an amazing place to finish this episode on, but thank you so much, Rebecca. It's been really good.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I could witter on all day, but it's been really, really nice. Thank you.
That has been brilliant. In next week's episode, we're joined by Martin Edwards, Director of Marketing and Advancement at Loughborough University. We'll be discussing differentiation, brand and marketing strategy during COVID. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean a lot to us if you'd subscribe. Disrupting the Degree is brought to you by the Brand Education and Carnival Content.